Hey, this is Todd Stacy.
And this is Caroline Beck.
And welcome to In the Weeds with Alabama Daily News. It is kind of the first of our Senate race editions. The field is kind of getting set here. We had the entrance of Roy Moore, as expected. Roy Moore entered the race last Thursday. John Merrill is set to announce any minute now his candidacy. So it looks like the race for the much anticipated U.S. Senate seat is finally kind of coming into relief.
Yeah. So are you expecting anyone else to join this race? I know a lot of people have been throwing around Jeff Sessions' name.
Oh, yeah. That's the, I mean, it's kind of like this shiny object, right?
I mean, look,
ever since he resigned and was kind of forced out of the attorney general's job, everybody's been speculating that, hey, you know, what if he ran for Senate? He'd clear the field, be a very strong candidate. And obviously that's true. I got to tell you, I don't see it happening. I mean, folks I've spoken with that sort of familiar with his thinking just tell me, nah. It's, you know, it's fun to,
right now.
Well, there's a lot of reasons why. I think we've kind of talked about it before, but I mean, you know, does he even keep his seniority? You know, he is up in age. It's not, he's not starting over as a, you know, 40 something.
Yeah.
It's been, you know, it took him 20 years to get where he was.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, he just retired as Attorney General. I mean, that's a peak in politics. Why go back to the
high.
Senate?
Yeah.
But more than anything, I don't think it's very likely, unless the only way I see it happening is if somehow we get to maybe, let's say, the fall. I'm not sure exactly when qualifying ends. I think in November. We get around there, and the polling indicates pretty strongly that Roy Moore is going to run away with this thing. Then maybe he would
jump in to
save the day.
It's the last minute.
Because I would definitely say that he would be in the we don't need Roy Moore crowd.
Yeah.
So anyway, I don't think so. But you could see a couple of other lower tier candidates get in the race. I don't think you're going to see any more major candidates get in the race. You know, I hate to kind of put it into tiers like that, but I think the race is set. You've got Congressman Bradley Byrne, former Auburn coach Tommy Tuberville, State Representative Arnold Mooney, and of course, as we just said, Roy Moore and John Merrill. So I really do think the race is settled into that and those candidates.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts about Roy Moore's chances? I mean, the national media really took a hold of this in the past week, and they're all touting that he's basically going to win the Republican candidacy. But what do you think about that?
Well, of course they are. You know, they want the rematch, the Roy Moore Doug Jones rematch.
Right.
Who doesn't want to see? I mean, those were probably some really good ratings. Too bad Alabama Daily News was not around to enjoy all of those clicks.
Yeah.
I've got some thoughts about it, and my main thing is, because you're right, that is conventional wisdom. Is okay, Roy Moore, whenever he gets in, he's gonna dominate the field, shoo in for the runoff, probably win that, and you know, love him or hate him, a lot of folks have kind of assumed that was the case. I would warn to be careful of this, you know, conventional wisdom, because I'm seeing different things this time around. I don't think 2020, this Republican primary, I don't think it's going to be like 2017. You got to remember, that was a special election, you know, and I just said it. It was a unique set of circumstances, and not just the general. Everybody remembers the crazy general election that Doug Jones won, but you got to remember the circumstances of the Republican primary that nominated Roy Moore were pretty special unto themselves.
Yeah,
and there are things you don't have this time around. Number one, you don't have Luther Strange. You know, Big Luther, he just did not work as a candidate. You know, the circumstances by which he was appointed to the U.S. Senate by Robert Bentley, you know, and the way that Washington kind of came in and shoved him down everybody's throat as a candidate.
Yeah.
Both of those really were a turnoff to voters. I mean, just think about the baggage that he came with. And look, you know, even if you take Luther Strange at his word that there was no quid pro quo. Just think about it.
Yeah.
You got an attorney general's office that's investigating the governor's office for a sex scandal of all things. And then that governor appoints that attorney general to the Senate seat that everybody wants.
Right.
I mean, it just...
doesn't smell right.
I mean, and it's the kind of like... it's the kind of like made-for-TV narrative that everybody got.
Yeah.
You know, it's some you know, complicated political things people don't really boil down. This was so basic and fundamental. And so even just your like casual... observers to politics understood it and remembered it, and so you know Luther just could never kind of shake that. So he's just terribly flawed as a candidate from the very beginning. You know, add on top of that the fact that once Washington had their candidate, once they said, all right, we're Luther's our guy, they went all in. That meant they kept other candidates out of the race, including Senator Del Marsh, who we'll talk to in a minute. Maybe Bradley Byrne as well. I don't know. But you know, anybody that was interested in running for that seat, the NRSC, you know, Mitch McConnell, they kept him out. And if you dared to run against Luther Strange, like Congressman Mo Brooks, they attacked you and called you anti-Trump. I mean, they were serious about that. And all that added up to just really kind of being off-putting, I think, to a large swath of GOP voters. And I'll tell you this, the biggest indication of that was President Trump himself. Because he came to, there was kind of this last week, last ditch sort of effort to get Luther Strange over the finish line against Roy Moore in the runoff. And so President Trump comes to town. It's in Huntsville, big rally. I mean, you know, these rallies. And it's, the, you know, he's going to put his arm around Luther and endorse. And what ended up happening was just this awkward, kind of half-assed endorsement. He was just like, I mean, you know, well, yeah, I mean, I might support the other guy too if he wins. So, and the reason why I think that's significant is Trump is this guy. Well, you know, Trump is the guy that can understand, he understands the anti-establishment folks. That's his... He's got a mind meld with them or whatever. And so I think that was pretty telling. Anyway, you know, all that to say, you know, Luther Strange, the baggage he came with, the way he was kind of shoved down everybody's throat as a candidate, that you don't have that, you know, existing in this primary. All that helped Roy Moore get the nomination, and it doesn't exist this time around. Second reason why I think this is different this year in terms of Roy Moore is that he's already lost. This is, you know, 2017 is in the rearview mirror. It, you know, it's hindsight. And what that was a spectacular loss for Republicans. He's the only person, and he's the only Republican in 10 years to lose to a Democrat statewide in Alabama.
That's not good to have on your resume.
It's really not. And more importantly, you know, the way he lost, all the allegations. Their horrible response to the allegations. I mean, they were just flat-footed. And, I mean, remember the weird cowboy gun-toting thing? Weird stuff. He kind of became a caricature, an embarrassing caricature of the state. And ultimately, you know, Alabama Republicans lost a Senate seat. It was a huge, you know, a huge deal. And people remember that. And you know, that what that does is it makes him the riskiest candidate in the bunch. Because he's already proven that he is capable of losing to Doug Jones. So you got a bunch of Republicans who just all they want is to be able to beat Doug Jones and take that Senate seat for Republicans. They don't care who it is. But when that's what you want, and this guy's the riskiest candidate, you know, maybe you don't go with him. So look, maybe I'll be proven wrong and he'll win overwhelmingly. I'm just saying those are two things that make it different than than 2017.
Okay. So you mentioned Senator Del Marsh, and he almost thought about getting into the Senate race as well. Did he have any comments about how it's going now?
Yes. This week I spoke with Senator Del Marsh, obviously the president pro tem of the Alabama Senate. We had a great discussion, and including about the Senate race. But what I was interested to know was really more the reasons why he decided not to run. Mm-hmm. 'Cause you go back to really last year, early this year, mm-hmm. Del Marsh was on everybody's list as far as, you know, potential candidates for this race. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like we were making that up. I mean, he was putting himself out there. He actively right. said, mm-hmm. I would like to run. And you go back to the 2017 special election, he actively was pursuing at that time. Ultimately didn't pull the trigger. Mm-hmm. Again, I think Mitch McConnell had something to do with that. Mm. This time around, it looked like, I mean, he was pressing ahead full steam, even kind of getting into the red meat issues. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the early in the Senate session, he was throwing out Common Core and right. illegal immigration and all these kind of things mm-hmm. that are the red meat, not yeah. necessarily, and that he wouldn't. He hadn't done that a lot in the past. Mm-hmm. What I really wanted him to do was open up about why he ultimately decided, no, I'm not going to run for Senate. I'm going to stay in the Senate, in the state Senate. And we had an interesting conversation about that. But so, mm-hmm. yeah, so just to introduce the interview here, sat down with Senator Marsh for about 30 minutes. We talked about the session that just concluded. Mm-hmm. We talked, you know, a few weeks gives you some perspective on what kind of what his thoughts were and how it went. I found it interesting that he's in Montgomery every week still, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. in this, you'd think it's kind of a dead time, but he's still here every week.
Yeah.
He talked, you know, and they're preparing for the next one.
Right.
Including on some of this prison stuff. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. We talked about that a little bit. We talked about his education governance agenda. Mm-hmm. You know, that was one of the big things that happened in the session that I think almost people yeah. kind of...
It didn't get as much, I feel like, hype as it really should have, probably. Yeah.
Just because it's a major policy yeah, shift.
Right.
But it was talking about abortion. And,
yeah, that
and
got a lot of attention. Marijuana.
Lottery. Yeah, yeah, all these, because they're sexier and like, yeah. here's...
Yeah, and we're talking about school board members, which just like a lot of people just don't know about. So, yeah.
Yeah, kind of mm-hmm. proving the point, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
But, mm-hmm. So anyway, it is a huge, and what I found interesting, and you'll hear him say this, is like, I said that. I was like, well, I don't think this really got a whole lot of attention. And Dale said, you know, I don't think I wanted to have a whole lot of attention.
Right. That's just probably because good. It, yeah. yeah. Good so, thing for him.
Anyway, I really appreciate Senator Marsh joining us for the podcast, and get ready to go in the weeds with Senator Del Marsh. Thanks for listening. Hey, Senator.
Well, good afternoon.
Thanks for having me in your office today.
Todd, glad you're here. Glad to spend some time with you.
It's after session, anything specific bringing you to Montgomery today?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we're already looking at next year. You know, government never sleeps. We've got issues with the prison system we've been talking about, trying to get prepared for that, and it may be even be a special session if, in fact, the governor decides to call one. But if that's the case, we want to make sure we're ready for it. So that's going on. We've got some issues with mental health we've been discussing. Also just spend a little time looking at what other items may be on the agenda for the next session, which being, I guess, late February of next year.
Already thinking about the next set. Well, I was going to ask if you'd had any time to, you know, unwind since the session.
You know, being home in the district is always good, and you know, I've got a couple of businesses I have, so it's good to be back there. But I try to find a way to get down to Montgomery once at least every couple weeks, just to do like we did today. I've had several meetings in a different subject matter, but just all about in preparation and getting information out to our members that, you know, what could be on the horizon.
But maybe a little more family time since, rather than being in session. I know that you're a grandfather now.
Well, again, actually, I became a grandfather 7 years ago. My oldest grandchild had her birthday the 16th of this month. So I celebrated her 7th birthday, but I have three granddaughters. And most recently, I have a grandson who's was just born the last 4 weeks. So yeah, I've got four now.
How about that? Well, it's been a few weeks since the session ended. You said, right after the Sonny died, that you graded it about a B plus, A minus, saying you were proud of how productive it was. Now it's been a few weeks. We got a few weeks of hindsight. What stands out to you the most about this 2019 regular session?
Well, I mean, obviously, I think you'd have to say that the infrastructure bill that was passed early in the session actually was passed in a special session within the regular session. But that was a huge piece of legislation dealing with infrastructure for the state of Alabama. And that's, it was kind of interesting in that particular piece of legislation. There was talk about it being, rushed through in a special session. And the reality is that a lot of work had gone into that piece of legislation that started actually a year before last. There were 31 meetings that took place through the pro tem's office on infrastructure issues, everything from deciding what was the current situation of infrastructure in the state, what are the needs of the next 20 years, what is infrastructure. There were a lot of information gathered, a lot of studying to be done, and because of it, we were very well prepared for the special session. So, in essence, the truth is, it was not a rushed piece of legislation at all. In fact, it was a legislation, extreme amount of homework was done and information gathered so that the members of the body in both the House and the Senate were well versed on the issue to make an educated decision. And that's what happened. And I will stand by that as being a very proactive, productive piece of legislation. Nobody likes taxes, okay? We get it. But at the same time, we have to have safe, adequate infrastructure if this state is going to provide safety for its citizens on both the roads and bridges, and also for giving us stable economic development going forward. And that's what this bill does. I'm proud to say that it's in my opinion, a modest tax increase that addresses the current and future needs. It has a growth mechanism to give us a chance to have some growth where we never had it before. And even after fully implemented, Alabama will remain if you look at a cumulative tax basis, our citizens are the lowest tax citizens in the country. So I think it's a kind of a combination of best of both worlds. We're going to get great roads, safe roads, good economic development potential. And you talked about my grandkids. I want to know that my grandkids have a chance and want to stay in Alabama when they come of age to work here. I think having adequate infrastructure and economic development, improves those chances. That's what I think we all want as a state that is competitive with other states. I think that piece of legislation does exactly that. And then at the end of the day, we can still claim to be the lowest taxed state in the country. That's hard to beat.
It seemed like the Senate moved pretty smoothly during most of the session. Was that your observation? At least opposed to the House. There was a lot of filibuster and slowing things down in the House, but it seemed to move fairly.
The Senate was extremely stable. Let me say this, that we, every member of the Senate body have great respect for each and every colleague, Republican or Democrat. And I think as long as you treat people with respect, even though you may be on different sides on issues, and you agree to let people have their voice at the microphone, these type things, then you can have a fairly productive and what I would say a session where you can really get along. I don't think we had a single late night to my recollection, not one. Because we were able to get the job done in normal hours and a lot of work done. But by the way we operate the body and we treat each other fairly, we were able to move forward. So yeah, it was a great session. I would say in the years I've been here, it's probably one of the most comfortable sessions I've ever experienced. And quite honestly, with as much that was accomplished, a lot was accomplished, and we did a lot of three-day weeks trying to catch up because of the special session. But I thought it went about as smooth as it could go.
And that's like the big, from the big picture, 30,000 feet from the Senate and the legislature itself. But you personally had a very interesting session. Came in with a head of steam with Common Core repeal, the border, border wall bill, and just many red meat kind of issues.
Yeah.
Senator Singleton gave you a Snickers bar on the floor, joking with you. And yet, my observation toward the end, as it developed, was back in your mode of managing the Senate, and you've been doing that for a while now. So walk me through that, your own personal session for you as a senator and how you went from beginning to end.
Yeah, of course, it was an interesting session. You got to remember, we came into the session with 13 new faces in the Senate. You know, basically a third of the body, more than a third, had turned over. So you really hope that you'll be able to get those new people comfortable. You've got to give them a chance to learn the process. And anytime you can have a session that runs more smoothly, it makes it easier to do that. It also presents opportunity that generally when people come in new in the process, they're more eager to learn and don't have an agenda in most cases. They haven't been here. So it worked well to, I thought, have a productive session with some big ticket items. So, yeah, I came in, of course, as I mentioned earlier, the infrastructure bill, all the preliminary work had been done through the pro tem's office. Every one of those new members I had met with before the session began and explained what had taken place and the information they would receive on the infrastructure legislation and why we were looking at it. So right out of the chute, they knew it was coming, and they knew that the information was readily available for them. Then I also, through polling data, we knew that the citizens of this state of Alabama are very concerned about immigration. I mean, they believe there needs to be strong border security. To that point, I had a bill that kind of mirrored and supported the Build the Wall project of the president. People want to see that happen. I realize in many cases of border security and immigration policy, that's a federal issue. But I think it's important that the federal government understand where the citizens of Alabama stand on that issue. I think we made it pretty clear where we stand in terms of we believe in a border wall. We believe in safety for our citizens. So that bill was there. The one you didn't mention but was important, it goes along the same line, it's passed a bill. It's a CA in which it says that you have to be an American citizen if you're going to participate in an election process. And I didn't even realize before I got some information, I think 27 states has similar legislation that there's a kind of a loophole out there that unless you clear that up, you could literally vote with not be a citizen. And so, yeah, that bill was introduced and passed easily in the Senate and passed in the House as well. The lottery, which was there again, most people, if you poll that issue, most people in this state, whether they like a lottery or not, they are fine with letting the people vote on that issue. We got the bill out of the Senate. I was hopeful that it would get through the House. I don't think it ever even got to the floor in the House.
Well, they didn't pass the BIR. Matter of fact, they came up one vote short of the BIR. I was going to ask you, what do you think it ultimately came down to? I mean, I know you said it passed out of the Senate, so maybe it's a House thing, but what's stopping that issue from?
I think, quite honestly, I think what is stopping the issue is that most people, especially there are those in the legislature who represent areas such as Greene County and Victory Land, who have been after getting some legislation to legitimize their facilities, local facilities. I believe in order to get a lottery bill ultimately passed, you're going to have some sort of a package deal that gets their facilities legalized in those areas. That's all I can tell you. I think that's what it is. And I say that because we had some local legislation to do just that. We got a bill out for Senator Singleton that dealt with his issue in the Senate, but it got stalled in the House, and I believe that's what it's about. But you got past those issues, and you know, we had two really good budgets. We were fortunate, had a record year for education and the amount of money that we had available. Passed the largest education budget ever passed. General fund had some leftover dollars from last year that made it to where we get through that process. Now we've got challenges ahead in the general fund. That's one reason I was hopeful on the lottery bill. The lottery bill that came out of the Senate had all those dollars going to the general fund, which would have been about $170-200 million available to the general fund had it passed. So we don't have that to look forward to now. So we're going to have to deal with some shortfalls in that budget process, I think, next year.
You mentioned the budgets. I was going to ask you about CHIP. That was a kind of a volleyball session. But when it came down to it, you put an amendment on the incentives bill, the rural incentives bill at the end, transfer the health insurance premium tax. Am I getting that right?
Yeah.
To the general fund, which I guess kind of stabilized that, because that was the $35 million that was all going to be for CHIP, and they still wanted to pay back the road and bridge.
Well, there were a couple things going on. Yeah, you're right. I mean, CHIPs, I mean, we all want to continue and will continue to support the CHIPs program. I mean, health interest of children is important, and we want to make sure that's in place. At the same time, during the infrastructure passage of the infrastructure bill, it was agreed to try to move some of the money that was being transferred to the courts back over to the road bridge fund. That number was around $35 million. When it got down to the final days, you know, the general fund was trying to send that money back, and they said, well, we're going to have a hole here. We're funding CHIPs. We got to continue to do that. Where's the money going to come from? That's when I put the amendment to move the insurance premium tax, which is really a set number. It's right at $31 million. It caps out at that number. But we moved that back over from the Education Trust Fund to the General Fund. That's ongoing, so we know that giving that money back for the courts, we're not going to have to turn around next year and say, oh, we don't have it to give back this year. The money, I'm sorry, going back to Road and Bridge. Mm-hmm. So to me, that was the easy one to do. We did it. It wasn't a whole lot of pushback on it. The budget chairs were on board with it, and it made it kind of was a last piece in the puzzle, if you will, on the general fund budget to getting it through.
There were some in the House complaining that they didn't know it was coming. Did you hear anything like that in the Senate?
No, not at all. And I mean, this there again, I mean, when it went on the floor, I mean, the budget chairs had to explain it. I mean, it was out there. There was nothing tricky about it. I mean, this discussion had been going on for about a week before it all actually transpired. But no, I think all in all, everybody was pleased with both budgets, the way they turned out. And understand, we moved $31 million out of the Education Trust Fund to the General Fund from the insurance premium tax. The Education Trust Fund last year had an increased revenue of $500 million. They have the growth taxes of the state, continue to have them. It's already projected they're going to have an increase next year. So, you know, it was a fair trade, if you will, to help the general fund keep its commitment of moving dollars back to the road and bridge fund.
I was hoping to ask you about education governance. I mean, it's a CA. It's going to be on the ballot this March. I think it's one of the most effectual policy-wise bills passed all session, but it doesn't seem to be getting a ton of attention.
And you know, it's interesting, Todd. I'm almost leery of how much attention I want to give it.
Okay.
But no. You and I want to talk. Thank you for bringing it up. I think it is the most important piece of legislation dealing with education that I have seen since I've been here, and I would even say probably for the last 50 years, it will be the biggest change in education, and it needs to happen. And let me explain to the citizens that are on this podcast how important this is. I mean, Alabama right now has an elected state school board. It's been that way forever, okay? And that board, which is, I think it's eight school districts across the state, is divided into. There are six states, including Alabama, that have an elected state school board. None of those states are in the top performers of education in the country. None of them. On the other hand, this constitutional amendment advocates going from an elected state school board to an appointed board, a board that is appointed by the governor, and all the members have to be confirmed by the Alabama Senate. This is a model that is used by 11 states, all of which on the upper end of education performance in the country. So it's a proven governance model. At the same time, this bill, the CA, eliminates the Common Core standards that were put in place in 2010 dealing with mathematics and reading. And oh, by the way, Alabama last year, NAEP scores, 8th grade math, we were 50th in the country, and reading, we were 46. So what we're doing is not working. And the reading, the Common Core standards on reading and mathematics have been in place since 2010. They've had 9 years, you know, it's not working. So this piece of legislation also states that the new, if this is put in place, that the new board, appointed board, one of their first goals and objectives, and it's spelled out in the legislation, is to develop a new set of standards for Alabama. Alabama standards that will match up and be competitive with national standards, mm-hmm. okay? But Alabama standards. So it does those two things, and I'm asking the citizens of this state, do your homework. Go get online. Google the education governance of states. Look at the NAEP scores. Look at third grade reading. Look at college readiness. Anything associated with education, and unfortunately, you're not going to be real happy where Alabama ranks. But if they will look at the governance models, they will see that this constitutional amendment is asking us and asking the citizens to just all together do what's best for education and put in a governance model that works. And I hope that the citizens will look at that strongly and realize, I mean, think about this. Most people who vote in it for a state school board member, most don't have any idea about that individual's background, their education policy beliefs. You know, it's kind of a shot in the dark. And also, the legislature could claim, hey, we provide the money for education, but we have no say in really who is on this state school board.
Same for the governor, really.
The governor, same way. But in this process we're talking about, if you go to this form of governance, the governor, whoever he or she may be, have to take responsibility because they make the appointments. The Senate has to take responsibility because they have to go through the confirmation process where they come before a conference committee where we ask hard questions, get those answers before these people are confirmed as state school board members. So I'm asking the people of this state to make this move. It's the right thing to do, and I'm going to remain optimistic that the people of this state are going to choose a proven model of governance.
How did y'all come up with this? Walk me through how the process went to deciding, okay, we're developing this, and this is going to be our plan.
You know, some over a year ago, through the Pro Tem's office, we started working on what a comprehensive education plan would look for the state of Alabama, because Alabama's never had a comprehensive plan. When I say a comprehensive plan, that's where K-12, post-secondary system, higher education, you know, all the different entities of education work together to create a fluid plan of education. That had never happened in the state of Alabama. we started these meetings, had a lot of presentations from different entities, and through this process, it was determined you can make a lot of changes in education, and there are a lot of changes that need to take place, okay? But one of the key things you've got to do is have a strong, stable governance in place for the K-12 system. And once that was determined, and we look back, okay, what problems, why do we say that? Okay, look back, for instance, an example. You've had, I think it's 5 superintendents in 4 years. I mean, there's no stability. It's almost unheard of to have that many changes in your superintendent in such a short period of time. And then you go back and start looking at the scores, the NAEP scores, the third grade reading. Only, I think, 40% of our third graders are at grade level. You take our graduating seniors in high school, only 60% are college ready. You start looking at these things and you realize you've got to have a governance in place to start laying out education policy and pick something. Let's try to stick with it until we see some success here. So we went from a comprehensive plan to saying, okay, part one is governance. And oh, by the way, you look at the post-secondary system today, which is working extremely well. We put an appointed board in place to that entity, I think it was 3 years ago. And it has made all the difference in the world.
Because it had been under the school board.
That's right. Okay. That's right. And it has worked so much smoother since that took place. So we've got some state history to show that it's a better system. We have history of all the states in this country, what they're doing. And so that was the determination. Let's get the governance first. And it has to be constitutional amendment. And I remain optimistic that the people of this state will do their homework. And if they do their homework, you cannot argue that this model is a better model for governance.
I found it interesting. This was really only one of two bills that the governor kind of went out of her way to support it. Now, saw there were some press conferences.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't every bit of legislation like that because it was the gas tax and it was this.
That's right.
I guess that's kind of telling of its importance to her. Do you think pass it?
Well, you got to remember, the governor, although she has very little control of the state school board, by her position, she is a member of that board, okay? And I think that she has been extremely frustrated over the lack of the ability of the board to make certain decisions and stick to them. And for that reason, she said, "Hey, listen, this isn't working," and so she's gotten on board with this, and she's 100% behind it, and I appreciate that.
So y'all have teamed up on a couple of issues. How has it been working with the governor since she's won her full term in office?
Oh, it's been great. Governor Ivey is very focused on the big issues of the state. Infrastructure, she comes right in, takes on a really tough issue with infrastructure. She's very involved now, obviously, in the prison reform legislation we're dealing with there. We understand we've got some big issues there. Nothing is more important than education for the state. If we can't guarantee our citizens that we're going to do all we can to make sure their children can receive the best education and opportunity, and that's what this governance issue is about. She knows it. So she's been willing to tackle tough issues and get out in front of them. So, yeah, it's been great working with Governor Ivey.
Do you have any idea when that special session might be called? I mean, I know a lot is unknown right now.
Governor Ivey is not going to call a special session until she believes everything is ready for a special. And that means everybody's done their homework and gathered the right information. You take the prison issue. It's just not an issue of providing more space. You've got mental health issues. You got safety issues. You got staffing issues. You've got to be able to address all of those at the same time. And as we sit here today, there are people working. The work's already has begun, gathering information so that when we come into a special or a regular session, that the members have all the information adequate to make decisions dealing with those issues such as mental health, safety, staffing, overcrowding. And that's the position we'll be in. I, myself and the speaker, would not ask the governor to consider a special session unless all those things are ready to be addressed and success is high for passage of legislation to get them accomplished.
Wanted to switch to politics for a minute. We started the year, you started the year, as a top contender for the U.S. Senate race, which is starting to heat up now. I mean, every poll or every snapshot of the race had you in it. Mm-hmm. Later on, you decided not to pursue that. Of course, you'd also considered it for the previous special election. Yeah. Walk me through how you came to that decision.
You know, I'd be a great U.S. Senator.
Oh, are we going to make some news?
No.
Are we going to make some news today?
Listen, truly, it's something that I always had aspirations to do one day. I had looked at it. You're correct. But I'm going to tell you, kind of walk you through what helped me and ultimately my decision. And I made some trips to Washington after having been flattered by many people coming to me, asked me to consider the U.S. Senate run. I was, as I said, very, very flattered by that. But Todd, you have watched the Alabama Senate and the way it runs. I pride myself in, I like a smooth running machine, which I think the Alabama Senate is. I also like a machine that, in this case, is bipartisan in that we work very well across the aisle. I've got a great relationship with the minority caucus. It's a Republican agenda. Yeah, I mean, but there's a way to get it done and still make sure everybody's at the table and has input. And we've done that. We've even, in my opinion, have compromised when we didn't even have to compromise because it's the right and fair thing to do. So that's the kind of operation we have here. And so when I went to Washington, I naively thought, well, surely behind the scenes, everybody in Washington, Republican or Democrat, want to get along and work behind the scenes. But I didn't get that. I didn't get that feeling. I didn't get the feeling that there was a real goal to work together to get the problem solved. And I didn't see that changing. So that was part of my decision. I said, you know, I don't want to get into something if I really don't think I can make a difference. And then there's another thing, and people have to realize, and as much as I would like to serve the state in that capacity, I also have to look at what is best for Alabama. And the reality is that the U.S. Senate, some of you don't realize this, the U.S. Senate is a seniority game. Richard Shelby, who's done a great job at appropriations, is in that position because of his seniority. He's been there long enough that when those openings came in, he's the longest serving, boom, he's there. Well, I'm 62 years old. You know, if I were 50 years old, I'd be looking at this race a whole lot different than being 62. Because in my opinion, we better be looking at somebody that can build seniority as an Alabama senator to put Alabama in a position such as appropriations and to get things done for the state of Alabama. So that's kind of, those are the things. You know, one, I did not see a real climate for willingness to work together. I did not see an opportunity to put in the years of service to build seniority. And the last but not least, I've got four grandkids, as we talked about. I get to spend time with them and family, and which is a wonderful thing to fall back to say the least.
Do you feel like doing your job of managing the Senate and seeing things pass through is more meaningful in terms of service to the state?
Listen, you got to ask, where can you best serve? And right now, there again, my situation with my age and the deal that I've got the knowledge of how the Alabama Senate works. I'm very pleased with the performance of the Alabama Senate and how, because it's about getting the job done for the people of the state. At the end of the day, you're working for the people of this state, and you want to make sure you have an organization that understands that and does what it takes to get the job done. I think we've done that. I think we've done it in a very professional manner, and I'm proud of the body, Republicans, Democrats, together, and the way they have conducted business in the Alabama Senate.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much.
All right.